We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started.
Hey, everyone. Stay tuned to the end of the interview, where I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening. Now on to my guest for today, serial entrepreneur and business advisor, Ezra Chapman, whose latest venture is LifeWise, an online platform for primary school students out of England. Ezra has been running businesses since he was 16 in a variety of areas, including services, recruitment, and financial tech. He's developed a strong foundation and vision on how to build a business, assemble and develop a leadership team, and then step away to allow those teams to grow the company. The key to success, Ezra says, is figuring out a set of core principles that will guide everyone's actions and ultimately shape the company's culture. Once the values are articulated and put into practical application, where they guide decisions and teams are assembled based on these values, a business can really thrive. One of the values Ezra believes in is radical honesty, creating a culture where people can share what they really think. Another is seeking to understand. While passion for your idea is important, you also need to stop and consider the client's or customer's experiences and how they might experience what you're offering. In doing this, he provides an example of how a principle becomes a framework for making solid decisions about a business because it prioritizes the principle, as in the customer experience, over the passion. Ezra also stresses that one of the most important messages a leader can give is that he or she believes in the team and what they can accomplish. Now, let's get better together. Ezra Chapman, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jari. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, we're on what, month 15, 14, 13 of COVID? I don't even know. Just sort of lost over a year of that. And I see some light at the end of the tunnel, which is great. And, I know you're over in the UK, so you're having a different experience than I'm having here in the US, but it seems like, I don't know, fits and starts. But generally, I think the world's coming out of hibernation. How are things with you over there?
Yeah, I think that's how I'd describe it, actually, coming out of hibernation. It's been a crazy 13, 14 months, hasn't it? And the UK, I think we sort of had a really tough start, but it feels like everyone here has really got hold of the whole vaccine piece, and we seem to be doing a pretty good job. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
The end of the tunnel for once, and we're looking forward to getting back to a bit of normality.
Yeah, I think everyone is. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later in the show. And you know, there's so many things that you're doing. I, like I said before we started recording, I don't even know where to start. So when I don't know where to start, I say, "Hey Ezra, why don't you tell me how you got to do what you're doing today, and then I don't have to worry about it."
Yeah, fantastic. Where do I start? So yeah, in running businesses, Jerry, running businesses, building businesses, and right now, probably the most topical business that we started up and which is really flying at the moment is an education platform called Lifewise, which is for the primary school children in the UK, which I think is the is that right? Elementary schools in the US, sort of 5 to 10 years old.
Yeah, we call them elementary. It's from basically kindergarten to fifth grade. Yeah, and I think it's 5 to 10 roughly. And it depends on where you are, what kind of school you go to. But you know, I think that's probably a good definition of it.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so over here we call that's the primary schools. And how did we get into doing this? Well, do you know what? I've been running businesses since the age of 16. So actually, my first business was 16 years old. It was an industrial cleaning business, cleaning abattoirs and fish factories. So that's where it all started. And that funded college and university. And then over the years, having grown and built a whole series of different businesses in recruitment and services, technology, we're in the fintech space as well. And like I say, the most recent one is into Lifewise. And I suppose we got here with a lot of hard work, some successes and a lot of lessons on the way.
Yeah, I was, looking through all the stuff you're involved with. And so would you say that you're a serial entrepreneur, or would you say you're a parallel entrepreneur? Because I'm confused, honestly, by what's the difference between the serial entrepreneur that's got multiple businesses going and the parallel entrepreneur, which is doing it all. Do you make a distinction, or do you use that label, or how do you describe, your proliferation and your scope, I guess, of what you do?
Yeah. So, do you know what? I don't look at it like that. It's strange, isn't it? So I think, one of the things that I've always done is I love working with people, people developing people. And that's led, as we've developed businesses, it's led to building leadership teams. And I think what that means is that when you're constantly developing people, it's super, super important, from my experiences, to not have any ceiling on the business for them. And what that means is that I sort of, as an entrepreneur, I try to remove myself from as much of the business as possible, as quickly as possible, to take away that glass ceiling for people to grow and develop. So my role starts, in different capacities, really. So I probably, I don't really sit there and think, what type of entrepreneur am I? You'd have to say probably serial entrepreneur. Yeah, it's all I've done really since I was 16 years old. And because of the way that you build those businesses, you start off and you found something, you build a team, you develop them into a leadership team. And then my objective is always then to really become an advisor to that leadership team, whether it's in the capacity of in a non-executive capacity or an executive chairman role or whatever it is. But that's my approach.
Yeah, so interesting, because I really like how you put this whole develop people and, you know, remove the quote unquote glass ceiling. I mean, traditionally the glass ceiling has been for, you know, women and minorities, which, you know, I think has been kind of the traditional way people have talked about it. But the whole general approach of, I love starting businesses. I mean, I think if I looked on your LinkedIn, you are, you know, currently, I don't know, it's like half a dozen more like involved, right? But you're right. It's interesting how you kind of, I have this idea, I'm going to build a leadership team, and then I'm going to, you know, become an advisor or chairman, or let them grow and foster. So how do you go about doing that? Because that's honestly a pretty rare superpower, because a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of founders have a ton of ego in, well, I created it. I'm going to, you know, run this thing until it blah, whatever. I don't know. Like, I'm just being kind of a bit of a curmudgeon today. But, you know, this is, I think, similar to what maybe Elon Musk does, or Jack Dorsey over at Twitter and Twitter Square, or Stripe, or I don't remember. I always get them confused. So what's your approach to building these leadership teams?
Yeah, it's a good question, Mike. So, I mean, it's everything, right? So the key to it, first of all, right, with any business is being absolutely clear about what your principles and values are. And then in terms of building your leadership team and the people around you and your first employees, they have to embody those values and principles. And I think that what I see in most small businesses is people are too keen to hire people to fix a short-term need that maybe compromises their values. And that's where people go wrong. And I think that, you know, so the building of a leadership, first of all, comes with incredibly hard work up front, working as hard as you can to identify and find that superstar talented person that can meet your short-term needs, but also you have total confidence on having sort of being able to not only sort of embrace your values, but become a real ambassador of the values and principles of your business. And I think that's why, you know, as a small business, it's so key to be clear about what those values are. And I often look at a lot of companies, and we talk about values a lot in principles, but they are so often, I don't know if you've been in this situation as well, Jerry, where you sit in a room with the leaders of a business or the team, the whole team, and you agree a set of values. And, you know, they're sort of added to an induction training manual somewhere, and they might be on a cup somewhere or the side of a wall. But then the next time that they're really reviewed ends up being the next time that the induction training manual's reviewed. And
you're right. You're right. It's a lot of lip service, a lot of buzzword bingo, a lot of like, we transform and collate the vapors of human existence into a tangible form by empowering and inspiring our employees to be, you know, like,
yeah,
but you know, like so much BS, it you can tell, especially, I mean, this happens also with brand storytelling, which is what I've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years. The same thing, like the brand, what the company you're building first and foremost is built by people, and people matter more than any technology, any product, service. It does, like, it's almost inconsequential what a team can build to be successful, because they could build anything if they're a good team. And as you mentioned, they have these kind of core principles and values. And that's kind of lost, I think, you know, and I'm glad you really brought that up, because I'm always looking for good ways to do that. Or at least, you know, when I help young entrepreneurs build their businesses or advise them or, yeah, you know, have coffee with them or whatever, it's always hard for me to explain that. So I was, you know, if you could expand a little bit more on that, because I mean, you're built, I don't know, dozens of businesses. So I'm just going to say it now. I think you know what you're talking about. So,
yeah, well, look, I tell you what, I'm so passionate about this, and the people we work with in the businesses come to be super passionate about it. And do you know what I've found? Jerry, right, is that the biggest issue is that people think about values in terms of what best represents their business. Okay, so it becomes a bit of a, you know, let's find the best word to match it. And I think that that's great and that's fantastic for that moment in time. But what I've found, and we've spent a lot of time on this in each of the businesses we work on, is I look for practical values. Okay, and what I say a practical value is, right, is a value that I can refer to on a practical basis that I can say every day. And one of the best ones I think the best example that we use is everyone has normally an integrity or an honesty value. And our value is radical honesty. And I know there are a few other businesses which have used that as well, but it's the best example of a practical value. And I can give you an example of it, which is that the teams I work with, that value gives all of the teams the strength, and it gives them the value to refer to be completely open and honest with their peers. And it means that we hear it all the time. It's used on a daily basis in our business, because what happens, they go, well, look, we'd like to paint that wall blue, Ezra. And then someone goes, look, I've got to be radically honest with you. That's a terrible idea, right? And the point is that it gives them a segue into using that value consistently. And so when we're looking at those values in companies, it's a strange term, but I look for them to be practical values, values which can be guiding values and principles used on a daily basis. And I think that anyone that's building a business needs to totally believe that if they get the right values in their business and they themselves apply them on a consistent and regular basis because they truly believe in them and they're practical, you can use them, then within 3 months, you'll have a management team, you'll have a sales team, you'll have the whole team, the whole business using them, and they'll be embedded and they'll become guiding principles for your business. And that's something that we've been super, super passionate about in all the things that we do, really.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you bring up the practical values, because when I was at Cypress Semiconductor back in the day, because I don't do corporate stuff anymore because I'm unemployable and unmanageable, is like what I like to say. It's not true. I just joke about it. But we had this culture there that, again, I love this whole practical value. What can you like say every day or do every day that's going to reinforce the values of your company? And at Cypress, it was this thing that we called precision question and answering, or the way it was always phrased to us is that if someone asks you a question, your answer must be yes, no, or number. You never, ever, 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 ever elaborate until you've said yes, no, or a number. And it sounds silly and stupid and crazy and a little bit like, I don't know, robotic in one sense. But the reason we did it this way is it was a semiconductor company. So it's driven by numbers and data and super techie, right? Just like, I mean, TJ Rogers, who was the CEO at the time, is just notorious for being a hard guy to deal with. And he's very like smart and he will crush you in a nanosecond. No joke, right? He did that to me so many times. Like I've got gray hair and scars from it. But we live this whole precision question and answering. We live this whole action-oriented, goal-oriented every day. And you know, I couldn't tell you today what the mission, vision, and values of Cypress were, but I can tell you that we valued precision question and answering for sure. And we valued this other thing called root cause corrective actions, which were the worst meetings on the planet. There is nothing worse than a root cause corrective action meeting at Cypress Semiconductor. I can't think of anything worse than that. So these practical values, do they differ from team to team? I mean, you talked about, you know, being radically honest. Are there other ones that you found that are kind of consistent across the companies that you help build?
I think that each company's different for sure. I actually, radical honesty is something which, from a personal perspective, that's the one example that I like all of the businesses that I'm involved with to adopt. And the speed of which it's adopted across the teams and across the businesses, and it's amazing. You know, in our last business, you know, we had sort of 15 offices around the world, 500 or 600 staff, and you could literally walk into. Yeah, we would set these values, these practical values, and discuss them, you know, in central sort of leadership meetings in London. And then when they were practical and when you got your leaders really, you know, and your leadership team really bought into them, you know, you could go to a, you know, an office in the Philippines or an office in Istanbul or Marrakesh, and you walk in and people would be using the same terminology. It really did filter down. And and according to what, you know, so in each business, I really believe that it's important that the whole business itself, the values reflect what the guiding principles are of that business. But I love the example that you've given there about the semiconductors, because that's just a fantastic principle, which I'm sure must have driven an incredibly incredibly efficient culture, that style of question and answering.
Oh, it was almost too efficient. I mean, I could tell you stories all day about it was insane amount. I mean, the anyone that's ever worked there, you know, former Cypriots, as we would call each other's, or Cyprus, you know, people, anyone that ever worked there, it completely changes the way you think about the world. And so all that stuff applied to like all the soft quote unquote skills or more subjective type departments like marketing, PR. Could you imagine you're in a marketing meeting and the way that you're interacting with people is this yes, no number precision Q&A thing? I mean, marketing PR communications is the most mealy mouth buzzword bingo thing on the planet. I mean, I think that's a bad thing, is, you know, right? Because those kind of words and that kind of attitude, that doesn't allow ideas to spread. And I think what you just nailed it right on the head. The success of practical values, I think, can be measured not only in, of course, the values being effective, but how fast they can ubiquitously spread across a multinational company. And if you think about communications and your brand as an example, as an entrepreneur, and you want to go viral or spread the word, you guys just nailed it. The practical value is the equivalent of a meme. Like, you got to make these memes, because what you can, you know, it's not really what you say, it's what you tolerate and what you do that matter. And having an easy way to repeat and spread your practical values. Gosh, really good. Are you going to write a book on that, or did you already write a book and I don't know about it?
No, I haven't. But I mean, I can't take the credit for that. You know, it's something that I've worked with amazing people over the last 10 or 20 years, and we've had consistent business partners in lots of the businesses we've done. And I think that, yeah, when you come back to the example you have of the semiconductor business there, you know, the question is this, Jerry, right? Which is, whether you agreed or disagreed with that style of questioning, what you have experienced there is the ability to create incredibly powerful cultures. Whether you thought it was good or bad, it sounds like you are in an incredibly heavily influenced, you know, incredibly strong culture.
Like I said, anyone that knows anybody that ever worked at Cypress Semiconductor, I mean, that was sort of what, if you were new to the business, you kind of went to like a half a dozen companies like that to learn the right way to do it. I mean, literally, the innovation there was not in we build innovative, cool products, although they did some of that. But the problem was that the culture didn't really like anything to do with taking a risk and failing, because it was geared towards, we make the best semiconductors in the world. And yeah. I mean, there was no one better at like yield enhancement, like all these things. And of course, TJ will say, no, we're super innovative. Look at all these patents and stuff. But from a practical point of view, you know, it was hard to screw up there. Like if you screwed up, like I said, those root cause corrective action meetings, they were the worst. They're the worst meetings I've ever been in.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, one time we were doing a Bluetooth chipset, first Bluetooth 1.0. That's how old I am back in the day, you know? And I remember I'm the project manager for this Bluetooth, you know, program. And we're on our seventh trouble meeting, right? Just imagine one trouble meeting's bad enough. And there's seven of these things that were, and wow. I remember presenting to it, and we had so many problems. I mean, it was just this nightmare of a problem. And I wrote about it in my first book, Frustration Free Technical Management. And literally I was on slide one, and TJ, CEO of the company, stopped me. And literally the vein on his, and on his forehead was just pulsing. I thought he was going to kill me. And I'm not joking about that. Like, he's the kind of guy where four-letter expletives were just his common speech. Cyprus felt like a Navy ship. I mean, we were just raw with emotion. I mean, and hard to deal with sometimes, right? But you know, four-letter expletives, every other word it was insane. And I remember he sits there and he's questioning me back and forth, and you know, and he's just getting madder and madder and madder. And then he finally got so frustrated that he said, we were called the wireless team. He's like, wireless team, you have 30 days to solve this problem or I'm going to fire all of you. And there was like 100 of us, right? And then he's like, get the F out of my boardroom now. And I'm like, okay. We walked out. And this is how driven it was to be like, I hope you got the message. The next day, he's like, sends an email to the whole team. This is the CEO of the company, sends an email to the whole team and says, you have 29 days left. I hope you use your first day wisely.
Incredible.
I mean, that's culture, right? That's culture.
How do you think Generation Y would have survived in that?
Oh, I think there would have been so many lawsuits. I mean, there was a time, I mean, TJ taught me a lot. And I'm not going to bash him for like, he was a maverick and a revolutionary. Don't get me wrong. Right. He was a hard guy to work for, but I mean, yeah, no, I could just go on and on about all the stuff I learned there and all the craziness, but yeah, like that culture was so ingrained in this do the right thing, numbers driven, very data driven. I've never been at another company that's been as data driven.
The important lesson there, right, Jerry, is not necessarily whether you agree with it or not. It's just to anyone that's starting a business, right, is that's achievable. The ability to create a culture where everyone completely embraces or adopts, maybe they didn't embrace it back in some respect, but you know, they ended up adopting it, and they adopted the principles. And here you are, I don't know how many years ago that was, but you know, here you are reciting the principles of that business, you know, the main principles. And you know, and that's the key for me, that you know, anyone that wants to start a business needs to take confidence from that, to know that if you really embrace the values and principles, I'm going to share my views in a minute on maybe principles, but if you really embrace them and you really make them practical, i.e. these are values and principles you can refer to on a day-to-day basis, then, and it, as a leader, if you can consistently refer and use those as almost a framework through which you communicate and you talk to your teams, then very soon, very quickly, your business will adopt it. And I think what you're talking about there, about that whole way of questioning the way that you were communicating, for me, that's like a guiding principle. And
yeah.
And those principles, again, they are, you know, your ability to identify and to communicate and to embrace the right principles, for me, they are like they are culture defining, and they are also the framework for guiding your decision making. And And I think, you know, one of the biggest issues I think I see in a lot of businesses is people get so stuck into needing to have the knowledge. Okay, they want information, they want the knowledge. And I think the key for me is when we're developing people, when we're looking at teams and leadership teams, et cetera, it's about developing skills and tools to acquire knowledge, right? To become incredible communicators or having the right skills to make good decisions. And that for me comes from having the right values and principles. And I think whenever I'm reading with all of the amazing success stories in you know, different entrepreneurs, whether it's Jeff Bezos or Steve Jobs or any of these guys, they've got such clear principles. You know, whether it's, you know, I could reel off four or five principles that I work from, which I use consistently, but then they're not come from me, that, you know, they're from Steve Jobs or from Jeff Bezos, but they just make total sense. Things like, you know, don't hire smart people and tell them what to do. Clear principle, right? You know, great principle to effective leadership. And I think if you can, and developing a set of principles is not something that you need to experience for yourself, but actually we look around and we see other people that are using these that have been incredibly successful. And if they're meaningful to you, and if you're running a business right now and you're thinking to yourself, actually, that what Jeff Bezos said there about customer centricity, you know, there's nothing more important than being totally customer focused. If you really believe that, and if you really believe that that is key to the success of your business, then you need to adopt that as a principle and let that become a guiding light for all of your decision making, for defining your culture, for the way that you hire people, the qualities and characteristics you look for people, the way you set your meetings up, the way that you do personal development reviews. Everything can revolve around those principles. So Jerry, I can talk to you about this for hours, but I'm incredibly there's one thing I can say, that, you know, if you work hard, okay, and you make consistently good decisions, more good decisions, you will go pretty far in business. And I think that the power of those values and principles is for the second part of that. That if you stick to a good, sound set of guiding values and principles, you'll make more better decisions, more consistently.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean,
wow. Well, I mean, you know who Ray Dalio is, I'm assuming.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wrote the book Principles, which I think just reinforces your sort of methodology / kind of ethos around, you know, love the whole, like, developing the skills and tools to acquire knowledge. Like, you're never going to know everything. And I think a lot of young entrepreneurs, frankly, I think young people in general, you know, they've got so much to learn, right? That it's overwhelming. And when you get a little older, you sort of start to realize, oh, actually, the most important thing I can learn is not the knowledge. There is some knowledge, and that's important, but it's to develop the skills and the tools to look at these sort of first principles, or so these fundamentals, so that you can kind of guide yourself in decision making. And I like to say, you know, there's these heuristics, there are these principles, and then there are these guardrails in which to operate. And when you're kind of outside the guardrails is when you got to worry, right? Like, oh, we're off the, that's what off the rails, like for a train, like, oh, we're off the rails, we got to figure something out. What are some of, like, you mentioned a couple of three or four, if maybe five principles that you adhere to. Can you kind of go through those and tell us how they came about and why they're important?
Yeah, well, I could talk to you about this forever. So, I mean, the first thing is that I grew up, my father was really influential. And I think I got this from him, where he said a few things quite consistently to me as I was growing up. I naturally realized that I was building a set of principles from a very young age, and I think that as I've developed and as I've got older, I've then recognized that actually I've become much more conscious and more aware of those principles. And I think the key is that, you know, nearly all the majority of entrepreneurs I know, I don't know about you, Jerry, but most of the entrepreneurs or people that want to start businesses, I would say a good proportion of those guys read books and they read lots of articles and content. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, most of the people that I know, yeah, they read a ton of books. And what's interesting is that I'm always, it's like someone needs to create a way for me to share all the books that I come across to, like, just to text all my buddies. Cause I literally, like, don't want to group text them because some people don't know each other, but yeah, like all the time they're always, anytime I talk to someone, they're like, have you any good books? Can you send them along? You know?
Absolutely. Right. And now in those books, there are people that are generally telling stories about their businesses, and there's business books, and there's autobiographies, and there's all different, you know, yeah, all different book, but fantastic books out there. And in all of those, there are people, you know, whether it's Steve Jobs, like we said, Jeff Bezos, Ray Dalio with his principles, whether it's any of those business leaders, or whether it's the books which talk about the inner workings of Netflix or Google. You know, all these books are written, and they share lots of the learnings and some of the key principles of all these businesses. And I think that the key, it's funny, I have a guy that works with us in LifeWise who, and he's one of our partners in there. And he is, when I first met him, he used to read a ton of books. And I noticed that he was reading this. And I asked him one day, I said, you read these books, great, yeah. How much of what you read do you really put into practice? And he was like, well, I'm not sure, you know, I think I'd like to think I refer to it. And I go, well, I think that the key for me is that in every one of those books, there's a whole load of learnings and people, there are incredible people that have made tons and tons of mistakes and have learned hundreds and hundreds of lessons with incredibly smart people. And they're prepared to share those principles with us, right? And so every time that I'm reading a book, there's always at least one, if it's a really good book, there's always normally one key principle that either affects a principle that I've already thought about and I work with it, and it broadens it or it sharpens it, or it launches a completely new principle. And I can give you loads of examples of where they come from. And I think it's just, first of all, it's just having an awareness of and realizing that all of those people that are sharing all of those stories are giving you all of the tools that you need to effectively make good decisions if you're running a business, right? And so I can't claim to be the author of all of them, but I can claim to have learned from them. And there are loads of them. And you know, so that we mentioned earlier about Steve Jobs, you know, the two which, you know, I think about from, and the reason I refer to people, by the way, is it's my way of remembering them. And that's very visual. So, but yeah, Steve Jobs is don't build what your customer wants, because by the time you built it, they'll want something else. Right. And so you have to think beyond, you know, you have to take into consideration what your customer wants, but look beyond it. And another one from Jeff Bezos is an obvious one around customer centricity. You know, those guys wanted to be the number one most customer centric company in the world. And just look at how well that's, you know, enabled them to cut through and become such a, you know, dominant business. But then there are less obvious places as well, Jerry, right? So have you seen the, this is going to sound slightly weird, but have you seen the TV show Making a Murderer?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. No.
Okay, great. Well, look, it's an interesting US TV show, as you probably were. But in the second season of that, there's an incredible lawyer, and she goes through how she unravels this case, and then what she says is that the way that she gets to really understand the case is to experience it. So she actually role plays the whole case as to how she's seen it fold out with all the people involved. And it gives her the most sort of in-depth understanding and appreciation and feeling for what her client went through and how to defend them. And so that became a principle for me, because I'm a massive believer in absorbing yourself into your audience as a business. And she referred to something to understand it, experience it. So that from that completely random TV series.
Oh, I love it.
Comes an incredibly powerful thing. And so whenever I'm thinking about, oh, is this a good idea? Oh, let's do this. I think, right, great. Let's experience it to understand it, first of all. Or try to throw ourselves in. So hopefully that gives you a bit of insight into like, you know, how those sort of values and principles really, really, really evolve.
Yeah, I like that. You know, let's experience it to understand it. Nice. Yeah. I mean, I find that's the same with anything. And I think that's this curiosity with the like learning. One of the things, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my dad was an engineer. And so naturally, you know, following the family trade, I guess, but he was a engineer that worked United Airlines. So his job was to make sure planes don't fall out of sky, right? That's like, he was electrical engineer, you know, very important job. But he had all these books, and these were like, not, you know, most people like, oh, you know, my mom and my dad, they read all these, you know, fiction and novels and everything. And my mom did some of that. And so did my grandmother. My grandmother when we go on vacation with them to like Mexico, she would bring a grocery bag full of Harlequin romance novels to read on the beach, right? It's just like constant, like, wow. But the books that were at my house as a kid were like, you know, Fundamentals of Physics, Electrical Engineering 1, you know, Algebra, Calculus, Mathematics. So, and I would just thumb through these, and there were picture books and books of, you know, popular mechanics and science, like all the stuff like that engineering type people would learn or would read. But what was interesting is it got me like just fascinated with, oh, if I want to learn something, you know, pick up a book. And I had this, had my friend, Nick on, the other day, and he's a sports podcaster and great, great content generator, great guy. And he's like, yeah, if I want to learn something, I just go to YouTube and say how to do, you know, and he's like, I've learned everything on YouTube. And I'm like, wow, that's so fascinating that kind of thirst for knowledge, you know? So, one of the other things that I have, like kind of my principle, one of the things I live by is that if you've experienced something, you need to share it and write about it. Partly the reason why I wrote The Entrepreneur Ethos. So do you, as part of this sort of process of developing teams and companies, do you write this down? Is this like a training process, or is it just kind of in your head?
No, I think, for sure, from a values and principles perspective and all that, yeah. I mean, I will definitely write stuff down to remember it, and I think there's also, I was reading another book just recently called Measure What Matters. If anyone hasn't read that, it's absolutely incredible, and absolutely, yeah, a brilliant book on sort of objective setting, objectives and key results, and about how Google and a whole load of other businesses have really got an objective-led and super efficient operating culture by using something called OKRs. Have you read that or seen it?
Yeah, I've read it. That's not the OKR thing, is it?
Yeah, that is. Yeah,
John. Yeah. Okay, I always get them confused. My one of my friends, Ravi, who's the CEO of Sutro, he's a big fan of OKRs, and he has a startup. I mean, Sutro is a startup, and so it's been almost a year since he sort of developed the OKR mentality and methodology. And his principle is similar. You know, the measure what matters is important. But what's super fascinating, and that's a great example, I think, of, you know, adopting other frameworks. I think they use that at Google, or came up with it. So, yeah. So, is it?
So what I was saying there a second ago, sorry, was that I recently was reading that book, and And I make tons of notes whenever I really feel like I'm embracing something that can really significantly improve, you know, my operating model or the business or myself, or it's a really valuable principle. For sure, I make tons of notes. And I was going to sort of say, you know, that even just on objective saying, I must have written about 15 pages of notes in terms of how it affects the culture. And I think, I don't know about you, but writing things down is a super important way from a learning perspective, from my perspective.
Oh, I have to. One of the was interesting is when I was in graduate school getting my MBA, one of the things that I wanted to practice was writing, you know, and I'm an okay writer. I can crank stuff out. I have the mentality that this is another like kind of mantra is like, I write for pay, not for praise. So I like have the kind of level set on that. And one of the things that I did in order to really like learn all the principles of business was I wrote a blog series on my blog called Business Basics for Entrepreneurs. And it was literally like the notes from all my classes. And so I wrote this whole thing. This was like 10, it was over 10 years. It was a long time ago. And it solidified it in my brain. So yeah, I have to write stuff down. In fact, as we're talking, I'm like writing notes to ask you questions about stuff. So that's the way I internalize it. And that's what that mantra came about of, if you've been through something, share it. Or if you've been through something, write it down.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the reason why I write books. That's the reason why I blog. I feel that if you've, you know, battled the dragon, slayed the beast, so to speak, and you got the gold and you came back and you lived to tell the tale, then you should tell the tale, because you're right. I love the fact that you quote all of these, you know, business leaders. And what's interesting is that everyone that's gone through anything is something to contribute. I mean, I love hearing, this is why I do this podcast. I love hearing stories from all sorts of different entrepreneurs about their journey, because I always learn something. It doesn't matter if they're 16, 20, 50, 80, like you can learn something from everyone. And that's another kind of principle I live by, like always be open to learn from anyone. And I think that's really cool that, you know, it's interesting that, you should really write a book. Should really write a book, man.
I've never considered it. I'll have to, when we jump offline, I'll ask you a bit about that, but
yeah,
maybe when I get a bit more time in the future. But I always feel that unlike you, Jerry, you've taken the steps and you've done that. I always feel like there's no need for me to write, because there's an endless amount of amazing stuff out there that I can learn from. Does that make sense? So I suppose.
Oh, totally. No, I get it. No, because don't. Yeah, totally.
I never think about doing it, getting out there and writing about it. But I think the other thing is, when you're running businesses, it's always a moving beast, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you're running your business and no day is the same.
Nope.
And it sounds like you're continually, obviously, you're doing something more than me. You're learning, developing principles and getting these experiences and sharing them, which is, I suppose, you're sharing them externally. And I think I probably internalize that spend my time really focusing doing that internally, really.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a similar process. I mean, I think in that way, you know, our approach is similar. I just happen to sort of do it more in public. I mean, this podcast is all about exploring the traits, values, and beliefs and skills of all sorts of different entrepreneurs. And the whole goal is to build a more inclusive, resilient world. You know, it's one of those things where I think everyone plays a role in that. And you know, you building great businesses and good leadership teams that can, you know, share your quote unquote meme, you know, your business DNA, so to speak, is the power of what we do as entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I totally. I tell you what's really interesting. I'll give you another example just recently of something which is really cool. So I work with my local soccer team, down from the
Oh, and you can call it football. I am of the educated class.
Okay, well, yeah, look, UK football, but soccer is over where you are. But yeah, I worked with these guys, and it was a little village football team, and it used to be my home team down in Cornwall. You know, it's a 5-hour drive from where I am now in London, and I worked with them for about 4 or 5 years, and we raised money, and we built stands, and we launched an academy for children from. In fact, this is where LifeWise came from. So, I'll tell you the story very quickly. But what happened was, it was a little village team, and I went down there, and my friend was who I went to school with. He was the chairman, the treasurer, and the manager. And I was like, wow, you look pretty overworked here, you know, in this little club. And he said, yeah, you know, it's and I helped them restructure and create a committee. A bit of a bad committee, and then I disappeared for 18 months and stayed in contact. But they this new committee with this new leadership structure started to get some real success, and I went back down about 18 months, 2 years later, and one of the chaps, he's about 75 years old, he sits on a committee, and he said to me, Ezra, you know, what's next? And I said, what do you mean, what's next? He said, well, you know, you helped us get that committee, and we've achieved all of our everything that we wanted to achieve, but we want to go a bit further than that. And I said, oh, I wasn't aware of that. I said, well, look, I'm staying in a hotel. Why don't you come and see me in the morning for a cup of tea? Anyway, the next morning I woke up, went down for breakfast, and there were 12 people. And
wow.
It's like, okay, cool, guys. And there's three or four guys that I went to school with from 4 or 5 years old. And I go, well, look, what is it you guys want to achieve? So first we'll start out. I said, well, we've experienced some success. The last few months haven't been so great, but we'd like to go on. And so I said, well, what would you like to do and how would you like to do it? And it was this terribly merciless thing where they go, well, what happens is to go up the leagues and to improve, basically what you do is you pay players more than other clubs and then you win and then you go up the. I was like, Jesus, that sounds terrible. You know, like, it's just can't be that mercenary, surely. So I said, surely there's a better way to do this. And they had a bit of funding because this new committee had launched a camping business and the camping business is generating income. So now this one-man band had turned into this thriving little club. So we went back to it and we realized that there was an opportunity for actually to create a club with a really strong vision. And that vision was going to be sort of centered around the community and people and youngsters because there was really poor standards of coaching in the area. Anyway, long story short, 18 months later, it went from nothing to about 300 children in an academy. And we then launched, we raised a load of money, we improved the grounds and the best facilities and the team's been incredibly successful. And I helped them put in a new chairman and then had to step away to take that glass ceiling away and just let them thrive. And I stepped away. And you know what's really funny is that I then purposely sort of said, look, guys, I've come on the journey this far with you. And really, it's really time for me not to cast a shadow. I really want you guys to, this is your club and your thing. You know, you're more than capable to go away. And the one thing that one of the guys said in a little conversation with all the rest of the committee members, he said, do you know what the greatest thing that you've given to us? And I said, no, I don't know. And I expect him to say, oh, you know, it was the sponsor you found for the kit or I don't know, something. And he just said, it's the belief that we can do it. And I found that amazing, this little belief.
Yeah.
And this very long story, Jerry, comes back to your point, which is that in order to create to realize your vision of improving the world through entrepreneurs, right? I think that's the greatest thing that you can do to influence that. It's giving more people the belief that they can do it.
And that's
our role from my perspective. That's my role in our businesses as we develop leadership teams, right? It's just giving people the belief that they can go far further than they thought of.
Yeah, I think that's my mission too with what I'm doing. I mean, I have a lot of, well, not a lot. I work with some professional athletes and we try to, you know, do camps and stuff, which we've done. We couldn't do it because of COVID, but some of the camps we would do these things called Founders Camp. Founders Camp is all about teaching kids how to be entrepreneurs. And that whole thing is that mantra about, oh, you know, you believed in us. That is the most powerful. I can't tell you how many times we take these. I mean, we have 3 days with these kids and they're from the inner city, poor, institutional racism, you know, generational poverty. Just you name everything against these kids, right? And it's sad because there's not one of these kids that couldn't be a rock star CEO of a startup or do whatever they want to do. They just don't have the opportunity or the education and, you know, skills, right? Like you said, building up the skills and the tools in order to like build the knowledge and gain the knowledge, right? And yeah, I it's funny because when I help young entrepreneurs, my mantra, I said this to someone, I was talking with Nick about this because Nick and I are on the Blue Wire podcast network, which is now expanding into it's just this massively awesome thing growing like crazy. And Kevin Jones is the CEO. And I first met Kevin back when, you know, Blue Wire had like 2 or 3 podcasts and he was thinking about closing it down. He's like, I don't know what to do with this thing. Cause he had no, you know, he'd never done it before. And I remember telling him, I said, you know, look, I believe in what you're doing. And I told him, I will be the first to believe. I guess I'm too optimistic this way, or maybe it's just my nature. But if I find a good idea or good talent, like I believe right away. I don't need to have all the caveat emptor about this, that, and the other thing. It's like, oh no, I believe. Let's go make this happen. And yeah, I think that's my role in the world. You know, as I think about it, it's to your point as well. Like when you believe in people and you give them the tools and the opportunity to succeed, that is the most powerful thing you can offer someone. And I think that's what I'm trying to do with the podcast and all the books and things that I'm trying to do is I believe in you. You can do it. Here's how. And then you're right. Like, you know, with Blue Wire is a great example. Like he's growing that thing like a weed. I'm like, it's all you. Right. And we actually had a little falling out a little bit about that because it was interesting. Because for me, I had like a little bit of ego in it. I'm like, gosh, man, I kind of want to be involved in this, but like, I don't have the skills, some certain skills. I'm like, you know, this is just, I had to really like reflect and say, no, man, I believe you go figure it out. I'm here to support you and then walk away. I think that takes a lot of courage and a lot of guts, I think. And how have you fostered that over time? I mean, I have a hard time with this. Like the ego gets in the way, you know, and I'm like, you know, I think it's a little bit of a rejection thing, a little bit of, you know, imposter syndrome. I mean, there's all these emotions about it. So how do you handle that in your own world?
Yeah, that's tough, right? But you're right. And I describe myself as a passionate entrepreneur, right? So I'm really passionate, and it's very difficult to, you know, and I think the key is that the moment that you attach passion to what you're doing, then it becomes much more difficult to then detach yourself from that. And I think just having a conscious awareness of it is the key. So recognizing that, you know, your passion, as with everything, it can be a strength and a weakness. And I think that it's important, again, those guiding principles, you know, so I can be incredibly passionate about a business, incredibly passionate about the vision and our vision at LifeWise. So, you know, our vision in LifeWise is a huge vision. It's like I said, it's a primary school education platform. And our vision is to become the best platform in the world for preparing children for life. That's it. We want to be by far and away the best platform out there for primary school children, elementary school children in the US, for just preparing children for life. And that's a huge, it's a huge vision. And I'm incredibly passionate about it, who I talk to. But as an example, if we're going to launch, if I have an idea for a new feature, product feature, this is going to be a great idea. Before we rush off and build it and tell everyone it's the best thing since sliced bread, you know, we refer to one of those principles. So it enables us to detach from how I feel about it to validate whether it's a good idea. And so, you know, I come back to I'm making a murderer, you know, experience it to understand it. So let's get it into the audience. Let's understand, you know, let's get feedback on it. And let's make sure that our audience, we truly understand whether we experience it and we truly understand whether it's going to have the benefits that we think that product is. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that a lot of entrepreneurs have, which is that they're incredibly passionate about what they're doing. And that creates an element of tunnel vision. And if you haven't got those tools around you, we were talking about earlier about the tools and skill sets which enable you to separate that emotion from your decision-making at the key times. And that's where those principles are key. They allow you to cut through the emotion and to make good decisions. And I think, so, I mean, does that answer your question in terms of how?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Ray Dalio talks about that in Principles as well. I mean, it was interesting. They built a tool for this, which, I mean, was pretty cool, about how to vote on ideas anonymously so that the best idea wins.
Absolutely.
And yeah. and he was very astute in this, and this is a subtle thing to think about. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of leadership generally, especially when, you know, young leaders who have so much passion and want to solve problems. And so what they found, what Ray Dalio found, was that, and this has been proven otherwise too, which is a really interesting way that it sort of, in a roundabout way, other people have proven this too. What he found is that the boss's ideas tended to get raised up and tended to get implemented and tended to get adopted, even though they weren't the best. Yeah. And there was another thing I read about this. Oh, I think it was in, it was a coaching book. Oh, and I don't remember the name of it. Anyway, it was this coaching book, and and this guy's an expert coach. I think I heard him. I must have heard him on McGinnis's podcast, because McGinnis is always talks to these awesome coaches. But his take, the coaching habit, that's the one. Mm-hmm. And he was like, look, you know, as a leader, as a CEO, as a whatever, if you're in a position of power, you have asymmetrical influence. And you're also in a bubble, because not a lot of people are going to tell you your idea is stupid. TJ, like TJ Rogers' example, like he would throw out all these ideas. Some of them were great. Some of them were horrible. But we had to do them all because he was the CEO and he was a brilliant guy, right? And it would waste countless hours and days, and I don't know how many decades of time, people time, have been wasted on crazy TJ ideas. But what the author of The Coaching Habit talked about was, instead of offering a solution to a problem, ask the questions to get everyone else to solve the problem themselves. So questions like, what are you concerned about? Well, what do you think about how we should approach it? Never as a leader, never, ever, 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 ever solve the problem your team is trying to solve. And that's hard. If you have an engineering mindset or whatever, it's hard. Because, you know, you're the boss. You probably have more information than anyone, and you're probably the boss because you're competent, hopefully, or you've risen to the level of your incompetence that people are like, oh yeah, he's the boss, just like let him go. But I found that, I mean, and I learned this recently. So this is like a couple years ago that I really started thinking about this more and more. And it sounds like that's your similar approach, where all ideas are sort of equal until, you know, they're proven otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like Ray Dalio, you talk about that. He calls it an idea meritocracy, doesn't he? So.
Yes.
Those are the best idea wins, which is absolutely the way to do it. And for sure, you know, I love to talk about it as to successes and lessons, right? So what we have in life, we have successes and lessons. And I think that the lessons, you know, I for sure have fallen into that category plenty of times, where I'm super passionate about my ideas and being a passionate leader, it's tough, right? And I occasionally make those mistakes. You know, I continue to make those mistakes as well. The key to it is to make sure that you recognize when you're doing it and then prize yourself out of that. Revisit. If you feel like you were slightly overpowering, or if you felt like you weren't really understanding other people's ideas, then you need to revisit that. So I think, you know, it takes a while for young leaders and entrepreneurs to adjust to that way of thinking, but for sure it's the way forward. And in Jim Collins' Good to Great, you know, Jim Collins is Good to Great.
It's, yeah,
uh-huh, one of the the Habits of Highly Successful People, Seven mm-hmm. Habits of Successful People. Mm-hmm. The other book, which is Seek to Understand. And I think that you were talking about curiosity earlier. I think that's an absolutely key characteristic of a great leader. And I think that you've got to, if you can really ensure that you're continually curious, seeking to understand, and really understanding all the ideas in the rooms before judging, I think that's an incredibly powerful skill set to have as a leader. And if you can drive that into your business, and you can build a leadership team or a small team of people in your business where everyone's got that culture of, you know, listening, understanding, qualifying, considering, you're going to make good decisions way more consistently, and better decisions than your chap TJ, who was just shooting from the hip, you know.
He had a unique style, let me put it to you that way. I mean, there's been countless things written about him, and I respect him a lot. He taught me a lot. Don't get me wrong. Like, he was very influential in my career, and with all his, you know, warts and all, and he'd be proud of that. He'd be proud of all the things that he would, you know, do. I mean, one thing that just so you know, he's not a complete nutcase. He's not. He would always give us a harder time during good times than bad times. So if things were going really well, he was harder on us.
Yeah.
When things were going really bad, he would ease up, because he knew that in good times we would slack, and in bad times we were working so hard. I mean, like, the recession of 2000, 2001 was just horrible for the semiconductor industry. I mean, one quarter we had negative sales. I'm not joking. Like, the chart went negative.
Yeah.
Because we were supplying chips to internet companies that were tanking, you know, and he knew. I mean, he was a very progressive in terms of, you know, compensation and trying. Like, he was tough but fair, I think would be the good word.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I encourage leaders to do, right? Which is, you know, unfortunately, one of the things which is a bit of a taboo subject, but, you know, not taboo, but it's an awkward subject, is addressing underperformance. And one of the things that every time that any business of ours has a record month, I encourage them at that board meeting to address underperformance at that time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. I also believe strongly that, poor employee performance or poor team member performance is a management problem. I either you hired someone that wasn't a fit, so it's a management problem. Either you didn't give them the resources, so it's a management problem. Or the person's, you know, you didn't recognize that person. So although, of course, there's always exceptions to that rule, but if you flip it that way and you say, oh, well, this is a leadership management issue, I need to either figure out how to help this person be successful, and that may not be at your company. There are lots of examples of that where where people would leave a company, then they'd go somewhere else and thrive. I mean, because again, it's people are messy, right?
Yeah,
and it's hard to do. So
yeah, and we see that so many times in businesses, right? Yeah, how many people do you know talk to you one day about this magnificent hire they've just made, and then within 3 months or 6 months of telling you that, you know, the same person's an absolute disaster.
Yeah. Well, it's common, or, you know, like
block it 3 months.
Yeah, because you can, you don't know. And again, it depends also on your management leadership prowess, right? I mean, if you're a leader that is of service, and where I think this is my principle, is that my job as a leader is to make my people successful beyond my own success. And my job is to remove barriers. So I'm the one that, like, I'm the one that should be sweeping the halls. I'm the one that should be cleaning the bathroom. I mean, honestly, like, that's the way I think of it, because our job is not to do, it's to think and remove barriers. And the strategy, like, we're, you know, the best leaders I've ever come in contact with have been so humble and so helpful and available. And they, like, oh, you have a problem? Okay, how can I help you solve this? Or what do you need from me? As opposed to, oh, you're screwed up. Like, you know, they always took responsibility and they took the ownership of that thing. So find it interesting how I can almost correlate that to success of a leader, at least in my experience. So,
yeah, 100%. I think you're absolutely right. And coming back to that point, which was, you know, your guy TJ there, which was, you know, it when things are going well, you know, it's ensuring that your mindset is, how do we get absolutely every square inch out of the next step, rather than being complacent because things are going well. And that's about, you know, great businesses are often born out of difficult times, actually.
And
I think it's important to keep that sort of, you know, growth mindset comes from having a consistent focus on maximizing everything you can do.
Yeah.
The moment that ego sets in and, oh, it's all going great, let's head to the beach. you're in deep trouble.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole sales mindset, right? Yeah. End of quarter. Hey, great. We made our numbers. Celebrate for a day, second day. Oh, we're already behind. It's like, oh man. So my last question for today is, what advice would you give a young or new entrepreneur that's just starting out on their journey?
That's a tough question. There's a lot of things I'd say. I mean, hey, can I ask you a quick question before we do that? Which is, yeah, what do you think the top one or two challenges a new entrepreneur has that you see? What do you think the two biggest, you know, the most common challenges that a new entrepreneur has?
That they work too much in the business and not on the business.
Okay. Yeah.
They have they're a little too wrapped up in progress, even if progress is silly or doesn't make an effort, like, doesn't matter. Like, they work hard to work hard as opposed to working smarter. I think those are probably the top two. And a lot of the other ones stem from that. But I would say the third one would be people, like understanding how to hire people, how to interact with people like that. Perpetuating their value system and their culture, like building a culture. Cause that's one of the hardest things in the world to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And absolutely. People are building teams of people which have no common, you know, common culture or desire or values, or they're just, disparate in the way they operate. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I'd agree with those sorts of things. I think so. Yeah. What's the advice? I would say that, I think the key is, right, and this might sound really simple, but I think it's be absolutely clear about where you want to get to, the vision, and then start, you know, prioritizing, be ruthless around what you prioritize as the next best actions to take in your planning.
Wow. I like that. I like that. Ezra.
Be clear about what, so just to say again, so to be clear about where you want to go, and then be ruthless around prioritizing the next actions and steps that you want to take to get there. Yeah, that's what I'd say. And I'd add one other thing to that is that if you're raising cash, Jeff Bezos, I don't know if you, I'm sure you've read this, Jerry, but you know, at the end of every year, he writes a shareholder report.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're legendary. Legendary.
And I think he then highlights his one key learning, doesn't he? Like the number one thing for that year. And I think 8 out of the first 12 years that he wrote it, his number one learning was to have more cash than you need. So I think, interestingly, for those that are investing cash, if you were to take the most successful guy on the planet, if his number one key learning 8 out of the first 12 years is to have more cash than you need, I'd be difficult to also argue with his recommendation.
That's true. Ezra, I really appreciate your time. What an awesome conversation. And I look forward to seeing all the stuff that you're doing and building these great leaders and all these teams that are going to go off in the world and change it for the better.
Thank you. Real pleasure talking to you. It's been really, really, really great spending time with you, Jerry.
Thanks again, Ezra, for a great, great interview. I really do appreciate all your time and talking to us about your philosophy on building companies. So, as promised, here are some actionable insights. Have radical honesty about what you think and feel. Be clear on your vision and where you want to go. Be quote-unquote ruthless about prioritizing the next best steps to get you where you want to be. Borrowing from observations of Jeff Bezos, always have more cash than you think you need. Well, this is one that I definitely need to follow. So there you go. Some actionable insights of, there was a lot we talked about, but those I think were the nuggets of what Ezra and I talked about. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.